But
you'd be surprised how many people do agree with this guy.
Again, you're right. But then, you know, how did he make it that far?
Because he's rich.
Exactly. See, yeah. Money talks.
And money without even buying people. That's the amazing thing about that's the most horrific
just being
and amazing
rich.
Thing
they
about.
Think like, yeah. Oh, he's successful. He's rich. Maybe he'll be a good president.
Yeah, exactly. Without.
Would you? I'm gonna give you a list of actors. Tell me. All right, again, Baini or Baini Allahi.
Okay.
Would you vote for George Clooney?
I wouldn't vote for any actor.
What? Not even George Clooney?
Why?
Because he's George Clooney.
No.
See, that's the mindset that people have that leads them to... I remember that year that Mitt Romney was running and there was this Chiquita on I don't know what, probably YouTube. And she was one of those, you know, blondes that... I'm not saying blondes are anything wrong with blondes, but I'm
Karens.
Pretty sure... I'm pretty sure she wasn't even a natural blonde. But she was, like, she was blonde, and she was plastic, and she was made up. And she was like, I think we, like, should totally vote for Mitt Romney because, like, he's attractive, and it's about time we have, like, an attractive person in the
no.
office.
No way.
Yes way.
That's crazy.
Yeah. See, this is one of the reasons I think a lot of actors would get votes. Because they have that actor, a profile.
Yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Uh-huh.
He was a senator,
the governor.
Wasn't he?
He was
a governor.
The governor,
yeah. So he wasn't even an actor. Like, he was an actor.
Hello,
you know?
Terminator.
Yeah.
He wasn't good at acting, but doesn't mean he wasn't an actor.
That's what I meant when I said he wasn't an actor, but yeah.
He got their votes.
So do you agree with that? Should that happen?
It depends at the end of the day. Like someone like George Clooney, I didn't just say it because, well, he's George Clooney, but also because he's been active in the political arena for quite a few years. Even Denzel. I'm not sure whether it has anything to do with anything, but these personalities, they've been active for quite a few years, and at this point, I wouldn't be surprised even if Beyonce's husband ran for office.
Didn't he already?
No, that was the other person's husband. I don't know their names exactly, but it was all over the news, and I found it very amusing. Because they have that celebrity status, and they endorse certain politicians... And that, you know, that creates this sort of affiliation between them and the political world, thus giving them the illusion that they can actually run for office. But
imagine an actor who's morally perfect. Imagine. That's what
imagine.
I said. Imagine.
You know, right. Okay. No, I feel you.
So imagine, do you think that that person should run for president?
Again, no. Another reason why I think actors... or any artist should run for office, any office, is because they're too emotional. Not in a bad way. They are very in touch with their emotional side. That's why they can act and sing and create art.
What?
And they shouldn't run for office because they're going to get hurt.
Are you serious? They're attached to you. They're too emotional.
No, I'm just throwing this theory out there. I don't necessarily believe in it. I just want to hear you counter it.
Oh, well, that was a good thing that you threw in. Because I don't believe that.
People have that belief toward women as well. Like, women are too emotional. They shouldn't run for any office. They shouldn't govern anything except their homes. Go make me a sandwich, woman.
Oh, amazing mentalities, isn't it?
I know.
I love those people. You know, they're actually on the right path.
They actually are. You can't lie. You're fasting.
So, I don't know. If they're that emotionally attached, they can't change those emotions and just bend them and just become someone else in a different character and mold into a different character in a different movie if they're that emotionally attached to whatever side they have. You know,
they're not supposed to be, though. I mean,
you know, they're supposed to be blank. They're an empty paper, and the director writes everything.
That's more reason not to endorse
you
an actor.
You know, I actually, sorry.
That's more reason not to endorse an actor. I mean,
exactly,
like, dude,
yeah.
Get your facts straight. Who are you? Even?
Exactly, yeah. You know, so we don't know whom we're voting for because we don't
which
know
character?
You. Yeah, exactly. Who exactly are you?
So, which person in which movie are you exactly right now, George?
Yeah.
I hope it's Fantastic Fox, that character. I would vote for Mr. Fantastic Fox any day. Please tell me you've watched Fantastic
Fox. I have not watched that movie.
Your life. Please tell me you've watched Mr. Fantastic Fox.
I have not watched
Mr. Oh, actually, it's the Fantastic Mr. Fox. You should reevaluate your life choices.
Yeah, I should.
Promise
I
me
should.
You'll watch it. Your baby will enjoy it, too.
Oh, no.
She doesn't.
She enjoys letting us not enjoy. Not letting us enjoy anything is her enjoyment. So, yeah, she's probably going to enjoy everything.
She's definitely your daughter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apples and trees.
Yeah, that's what they say.
So, yeah. And I would vote for Fantastic Mr. Fox's character for those who've watched it. For those who haven't, it's directed by Wes Anderson, I think. But because he possessed a certain je ne sais quoi to him, a certain quality of let's get things done,
mm-hmm.
right? If you watch the cartoon, yeah, you'll see that there's no such thing as a dead end for a fox.
Yeah,
because he actually literally hits rock bottom in his cage with his pregnant wife. And then he's like, what are we doing? What are foxes best at? And they start digging like crazy and they save their set themselves.
Yeah, but that mentality solely isn't sufficient because apparently Donald Trump had that mentality.
Did he really?
Let's get things done. He was actually doing those things, wasn't he?
Well, he did get things done.
Yeah, he did get things done.
See, the mentality itself is valuable, but it depends on what kind
where it's channeled.
Exactly, where it's channeled.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, you're right. But
you know, it's like the knife. Whether it's like a knife, if it's in the hands of a surgeon or the hands of a serial killer.
Mm-hmm. Who's a surgeon? I just twisted everything.
I know. That was a good plot twist. And another reason why actors shouldn't become politicians is because they really don't know about the ABC, the ropes, the fundamentals of politics. But at the other hand, because they don't have experience, they
actually,
spend their entire lives getting
they?
Awards. When did you learn about politics, man?
For example, there are actors who have to get into the correct character. And in order for them to be in that character, they need to study a lot, you know, and find out the background of what happened. For example, if they're in a movie, a historic movie, they have to get
Christian Bale would be a good president then.
He
does a lot of method acting. And the other guy.
He's not there anymore.
Wait. Daniel Day-Lewis.
Mm.
He would be a good actor too. A good president.
Keanu Reeves.
Reeves
would be the
yes.
president.
I would vote for Keanu Reeves any day.
You know?
Any day.
But I still won't, because I still don't know who he is. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, you know.
I don't know who Keanu
is. Actually, from what I've heard about him and read about him on social media and other websites, he probably is a woke person. That's what I've come across.
Yeah, he's very woke.
You know? What does woke mean? Could you elaborate?
You don't know what it means, or people might not know. Everyone knows what woke means.
Okay, then
we'll talk
elaborate.
Later after the show. All right. But the other thing about actors is that they'd be really good at convincing people, because that's literally their job.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that could get them the votes. And again, the actor status, the celebrity status. But at the end of the day, I still have mixed feelings about whether actors or any entertainer in that sense should run for any sort of position in office. Because I don't trust them.
Yeah, same.
Right?
Same, yeah.
Yeah. We actually agreed on something.
Yeah,
this is a milestone. This should go down in history. And this is all the time we have for today's episode of Youth Station. Thank you so very much for being with us. I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Go vote. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator, my Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, I am braver, my defender. fighting in silence with patience and guidance. However, when I need you, the light, when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love.
Over 250 international organizations are demanding urgent action from global governments to address the hunger and famine faced by hundreds of millions, a crisis the group said is driven largely by policy choices, including ignored appeals for a global ceasefire and humanitarian funding. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Andrea Germanis Ryder. This article is published under the heading, People are not starving, they are being starved. Over 250 groups demand rich nations provide urgent food assistance. Please stay tuned for the details. Over 250 international organizations are demanding urgent action from global governments to address the hunger and famine faced by hundreds of millions, a crisis, the group said, is driven largely by policy choices, including ignored appeals for global ceasefire and humanitarian funding. These people are not starving, they're being starved, the group wrote in an open letter released on Tuesday, April 20th. Referencing the countries where they operate, including Yemen, Afghanistan, Ethiopia, South Sudan, Burkina Faso, DRC, Honduras, Venezuela, Nigeria, Haiti, CAR, Uganda, Zimbabwe, and Sudan, where they operate, the group said, these girls and boys, men and women, are being starved by conflict and violence, by inequality, by the impacts of climate change, by the loss of land, jobs, or prospects, by a fight against COVID-19 that has left them even further behind. The letter signed by the International Council of Voluntary Agencies, Oxfam International, Danish Refugee Council, and Save the Children was released a year after the World Food Programme, WFP, Executive Director David Peasley warned of the threat of multiple famines of biblical proportions. Despite that grave warning, the group said in a statement that so far this year donors have funded a mere 5% of the United Nations $7.8 billion food security appeal for 2021. Every day we share stories and evidence of hunger, starvation, and increasing humanitarian needs. Yet this does not prompt urgent action or sufficient funding, they wrote. It is human action that are driving famine and hunger, the group said, and it is our actions that can stop the worst impacts. The letter asks the states to immediately provide $5.5 billion in food assistance to reach those who are a step away from famine. That amount, the group's statement noted, is the equivalent of less than 26 hours of the $1.9 trillion of countries spend each year on the military. Given conflict's role in driving hunger, global leaders must also work to end conflict and violence in all its forms, including by heeding UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres' call last year for for global ceasefire so that humanitarian assistance can reach those in need. There is no place for famine and starvation in the 21st century, the open letter says. History will judge us all by the actions we take today. Oxfam International Executive Director Gabriella Butcher said there is no time to wait. The richest countries are slashing their food aid, even as millions of people go hungry. This is an extraordinary political failure, said Butcher, urging them to urgently reverse these decisions. And we must confront the fundamental drivers of starvation. Global hunger is not about lack of food, but a lack of equality, she added. Inger Ashing, CEO of Save the Children, issued a similarly scathing statement. We have warned donors over and over again, their inaction is leading to death and despair among children, as we see in countries across the globe every single day, Ashing said. That thousands of children will be dying of hunger and disease in 2021 is a political choice, she added, unless governments radically choose to help save the lives of children. WFP warned last year that 270 million people were on the brink of starvation. Receiving the Nobel Peace Prize in December on behalf of the organization, WFP's Beasley said that the award was more than a thank to you. It is a call to action.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The month of Allah presents Ahkam, Islamic Commandments of Fasting by Hujjatul Islam Khakdaman.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Hello, greetings and welcome to our program. This is month of Allah and I'm very happy to talk about the ahkam regarding the month of Ramadan. Previously I talked about the notion of kafara or atonement in month of Ramadan. This episode I'm going to continue and close the discussion on this concept. Previously we said that if you deliberately break your fast, you need to atone for it. You need to either fast for 60 days or make 60 people full or give them food. But there is one form of atonement which is harder, and that's breaking your fast with committing something haram. Now, what was the first kind of kafara? If, for example, a person deliberately just ate something in the middle of the period of the fasting, right? Or drank something, or that person, for example, threw up intentionally. That person has to fast 60 days or give food to 60 people and that's over. But if you break your fast by committing something haram, like adultery, illegal intercourse, or masturbation, or drinking wine, then it means you have to atone more. We call that kafaratul jam'a. It means those options that we already talked about, either you fast for 60 days or either you feed 60 people. No, you need to do all of them together because you have just broke your fasting by doing something haram. So if somebody masturbates, that person has to fast for 60 days and feed 60 people. Now, if somebody breaks the fasting by doing a couple of activities that normally would break, like the person eats something and then drinks something and then, for example, has intercourse with his wife, a couple of things, like throws up again. Doing a couple of halal things that will break the fast will result in just one atonement. But if you do a couple of haram things and you do them repeatedly again, like a person masturbates, for example, three times, or has illegal intercourse, for example, three times in that period of one day of fasting, it means that the kafaratul jam becomes three times more. So breaking your fast by a halal activity, by a normal activity, eating or drinking, will have atonement for you, but that's the optional one. You have option either to fast 60 days or feed 60 people or make them full. But if you break it with something haram, then the consequence becomes doubles or triples. So this is very important, and it tells us how much destructive is it, how much illegal and sinful is it, how much God distastes it. The fact that a Muslim not only breaks the fasting, the month that has all of this grace and all of this mercy down from God, but a person doesn't care about that, a Muslim doesn't care about that, breaks the fast not only with something halal but with something forbidden, which in other months are also forbidden and prohibited. But in this month, you know, the prohibition is stronger, because in this month especially we are the guests of God, and we need to care more about our actions. May God bless you and us, and help us both, you and us, in this month to be able to understand more and do more in God's favor. Thank you so very much. Goodbye.
Israel is widely viewed as a destabilizing force in the West Asia region. It has started many wars over the past decades against regional nations. The occupying regime's hostile actions are unending. Right now, it routinely launches airstrikes against targets in Syria. It is also widely blamed for high-profile assassinations of top nuclear scientists in Iran. The regime is believed to have carried out the recent sabotage attack on Iran's Natanz nuclear facility, which operates under the supervision of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Iran was quick to pledge to retaliate for the attack on Natanz. Tel Aviv apparently knows no limit when it comes to clandestine operations against other countries. The regime always says it carries out such actions out of worries for its own security. Such dangerous policies could be starting to backfire. This week, a sensitive missile factory in central Israel was rocked by a powerful blast. The huge explosion, which created a mushroom cloud, hit the Tomer factory for advanced weapons. Israeli officials say the blast was a test. On Thursday, a missile fired from Syria landed near the secretive Dimona nuclear weapons facility, triggering warning sirens. The Israeli military said the projectile was a surface-to-air missile fired by Syrian forces against Israeli warplanes. It says the projectile overflew its target and landed near Dimona. But the heavily protected nuclear facility is some 300 kilometers south of Damascus. It is a very long distance for an errant missile. The missile fired from Syria on Thursday landed just some 30 kilometers away from the notorious Israeli nuclear facility. Military experts say this has once again revealed that much trumpeted Israeli air defenses are penetrable, The projectile made it through the air defense layers despite the fact that anti-aircraft and anti-missile systems around Dimona have been significantly boosted in anticipation of a possible retaliatory missile or drone attack by Iran or resistance groups close to Iran.
By looking at this particular site, Dimona, where this weapon nearly hit, it's saying, well, if you really want to have some sort of fight, you do realise that your nuclear facilities, we know exactly where they are, and they could be hit too. And I'm afraid just simply repeating the lies about the impenetrability of the Israeli air defences and missile defences is not going to save anybody in a conflict. It's really just hot air.
Israeli media, like the Times of Israel, have highlighted the fact that the missile landed deep inside Israel amid heightened tensions with Iran and after Tehran's pledge of retaliation. Some other media organizations, like the Middle East Monitor, said Netanyahu's comments after the attack on Natanz looked like a claim of responsibility, and this may have pushed Iran to retaliate. Israel seems increasingly worried about the possibility of the United States removing sanctions against Iran to re-enter the 2015 nuclear deal that America abandoned under former President Donald Trump. Israel has always been a vociferous critic of the deal, also known as a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. The regime could carry out more covert operations against the Iranians, further raising regional tensions. But if that happens and things spiral out of control, the regime has to be held responsible for possible repercussions for the region and beyond.
Iran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal are holding talks in the Austrian capital, Vienna, trying to salvage the accord. The 2015 nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, has been at crisis ever since the United States left the pact unilaterally in 2018 and imposed sanctions against Iran. While Tehran's precondition for returning to compliance is removal of all U.S. sanctions, Washington has so far refrained from doing so. U.S. media have cited a source close to America's top nuclear negotiator, Robert Malley, in Vienna, as saying that Washington is opposed to removal of all sanctions imposed on Iran. Current U.S. officials and sources close to American and European negotiators have now been saying that the U.S. is dividing the post-JCPOA sanctions into JCPOA-related and non-JCPOA-related ones, and intends to remove only the former. The presence of numerous Iranian names on the United States' specially designated nationals and blocked persons list, even if apparently unimportant individuals, would also sharply restrict the ceiling for Iran's benefits from the JCPOA. Iran wants these names to also be removed. Iran, meanwhile, is saying that it considers all those sanctions as JCPOA-related because they were imposed with the intent to affect the deal and its implementation, or most recently, the negotiations to revive it. Iran's foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, says Tehran is proposing a logical path to the U.S. for its full compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal. He called on the U.S. to return to full compliance first, and then Iran will reciprocate after rapid verification of Washington's compliance. Zarif also stressed that all sanctions imposed by former President Donald Trump must be removed. The main sanctions were imposed on Iran's oil and banking sectors. Speaking to Press TV, Iran's top negotiator and deputy foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, highlighted Tehran's stance on returning to compliance with the pact.
We only go back to full compliance when the U.S. has lifted all sanctions imposed or reimposed or relabeled after January 2017 and has verified by the Islamic Republic of Iran. Then we would go for full compliance.
The Iranian diplomat also rejected the idea of a step-by-step return to the nuclear accord.
Well, certainly there are sanctions that were imposed under the Trump administration separate from the JCPOA that were designed to make it more difficult for the Biden administration to get back into the deal. But the Biden administration had time before it came into the White House, and now it's been 3 months. They have had the time to figure out how to lift those sanctions that were not related to the JCPOA.
During the former U.S. administration of Donald Trump, Washington unilaterally left the JCPOA. Trump reimposed a series of expansive sanctions on Iran that had been lifted under the deal, this time not under the pretext of concerns about Iran's nuclear program, which the JCPOA had already addressed, but under new labels, for instance, so-called sponsorship for terrorism. However, Robert Malley, the U.S. Special Envoy for Iran, has already admitted that the maximum pressure campaign launched by the previous administration yielded no results. He said Washington is seeking to achieve a mutual return to compliance with the nuclear deal. While the U.S. seems to try to use the sanctions as leverage in the negotiations on the 2015 nuclear deal, Iran has made it clear that it will only return to its commitments under the accord once it has verified that all imposed, reimposed, and relabeled U.S. sanctions against Tehran are removed.
Certainly, if there are remaining sanctions that are having an impact on the Iranian bank, for example, that makes it hard to have transactions with not only the U.S., but countries all over the world, that is problematic. If there continue to be sanctions that make other companies in countries outside the U.S. Worried about doing business with Iran because they continue to be afraid that they will be sanctioned by the United States, that is problematic. And so the U.S. really has to lift all of these sanctions because they are interconnected.
Iran is articulating what should happen in order for the deal to be revived in its original form. By refusing to listen, the United States and Europe are only making it more difficult for the prospect to materialize.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says it will force Israel to free Palestinian prisoners. Senior Hamas official Khaled Mash'al said the issue of Palestinian prisoners is a top priority for all Palestinians. Mash'al said Hamas is keen on conveying the prisoners' message to the international community. He underlined the fact that Israel will not release Palestinian prisoners except through resistance by Palestinians and that negotiations are not the way forward. The comments came as Palestinians just marked the Prisoners' Day. On April 17th of each year, Palestinians expressed their loyalty to those imprisoned by the regime and as a reminder of their legitimate struggle for freedom. An estimated 4,500 Palestinians are languishing in Israeli jails, many for simply challenging Israel's occupation. They include 41 women and 140 children below 18 years. Since the beginning of 2021, Israeli authorities have arrested nearly 1,400 Palestinians. Some estimates have put the number of Palestinians to have been jailed at over 1 million.
Well, on the 22nd November 1974, the United Nations General Assembly recognized the right of Palestinian people to self-determination, national independence, and sovereignty of Palestine. And these jailings of the people of Palestine are in complete contradiction to the UN General Assembly resolution. The Palestinians have a right to resist, they have a right for their homeland, and what we've seen is this systematic jailing of Palestinians. Now, whether the resistance is through the PLO, the PFLP, Hamas, the authority, or individual Palestinians is irrelevant. The relevance is that this is a criminalization, not just of a community, but of a whole nation. The figure of 1 million is shocking when we bear in mind that the population of Palestine currently is estimated at 5 million. That means that 20% of the entire population of a nation has been jailed at one particular time. And this figure in itself is shocking. It's a shocking figure, and it's something that should be rejected, and Palestinian people need to be supported in their legal battle and in their right to a homeland.
The Palestinian Prisoners' Day comes as nearly 550 inmates suffer from various diseases and require close monitoring and health care. At least 10 inmates suffer from cancer of varying degrees, including Fuad al-Shubaki, 82, the oldest of the prisoners. So far, 368 jailed Palestinians have been infected with the coronavirus. Some Palestinians have spent 4 years in captivity, with 543 sentenced to several life sentences. That brings to the spotlight the fact that the regime continues with its violation of Palestinian human rights.
Palestinians have suffered human rights abuses for decades and decades now. It will only stop when Palestinians have the right to return, when Palestinians have their homeland, and when they can legally control their own destiny. At the moment, Palestinians have very few rights, and this is part of the problem that they've been facing for many years now.
But Tel Aviv's violation of rights does not suffice to that. The regime has kept nearly 3 million Gazans under a tight blockade since 2007. As long as the coronavirus pandemic is concerned, the Israeli regime's inhumane practices have led to a state of de-development within Gaza's healthcare system, making it extremely hard for healthcare workers to combat the coronavirus pandemic. In the occupied West Bank, the regime continues with its other violations, including settlement expansions. But why isn't the international community able to put an end to the Israeli crimes?
Well, the situation in terms of Israel-Palestine is part of a global situation. There are vested interests on both sides, and clearly the power resides against the Palestinians. There are many national organizations, international organizations, and nations who are supporting the Palestinian rights, and they should continue to do so until Palestinians get what they deserve under the UN Convention.
Israel has been violating the rights of Palestinians with impunity since day one of its installment in the region by its Western creators. Tel Aviv enjoys full support from the U.S. in particular. No matter which party's candidate wins the race for the White House in U.S. presidential elections, there is an unwritten tradition in the U.S. foreign policy which regards the Israeli regime as a sacrosanct. In line with that tradition, each and every meaningful effort to call Tel Aviv to account at the UN Security Council over its crimes has been aborted by the U.S. that holds veto power at the world body.
The United States announced last week its plan to withdraw all its troops from Afghanistan. In a White House speech, President Joe Biden said it was time to end Washington's longest war in history.
After consulting closely with our allies and partners, with our military leaders and intelligence personnel, with our diplomats and our development experts, with the Congress and the Vice President, as well as with Mr. Ghani and many others around the world, I concluded that it's time to end America's longest war. It's time for American troops to come home.
Biden said the withdrawal will begin from May 1st and conclude by September 11 this year. Shortly after his announcement, NATO said in a statement that it will coordinate its troops' withdrawal from Afghanistan with the United States.
In the light of the U.S. decision to withdraw, foreign and defense ministers of NATO discussed the way forward today and decided that we will start the withdrawal of NATO rescue support mission forces by May 1st.
The NATO chief said it is now up to the Afghans to reach sustainable peace. but the U.S. government has kept silent about whether it will also withdraw American private contractors conducting operations there.
So on the contractors, we don't know exactly. There's some preliminary plans. Clearly, the goal is to get all our personnel out, and I suspect that contractors will be part of that. Whether there'll still be a need for some contractor support, I just don't know. We don't have that level of detail right now. We're still working through that.
The New York Times has cited U.S. officials as saying that the U.S. is planning to continue its presence in Afghanistan by keeping the contractors and operatives in the country following the withdrawal of its troops.
Biden is trying to present himself as a new kind of president. And to do that, he has to make some pretend announcements that things are changing. This is one of them.
So why has the U.S. decided to pull out its forces if it's so keen on keeping its military presence there? Washington-linked private security companies have a long history of committing war crimes and interfering in countries around the world. Perhaps one of the most notorious of the American private contractors is Blackwater, now renamed Academy, which has been involved in several major scandals. The most notable was an incident in 2007 in Iraq, when four Blackwater security personnel killed 14 civilians, two of whom children. Former U.S. President Donald Trump exacerbated this scandal by pardoning the contractors in his final days in office. But Blackwater is not the only such American firm that is active in conducting high-level overseas operations.
America has approximately 500 military bases around the planet. It has hundreds of major bases, and then it has hundreds of minor bases. So Afghanistan is just one peg in a worldwide network of military bases that the United States uses to put pressure on different regions to support its political, economic, and social goals as an empire.
Back in May 2020, Venezuela arrested 13 individuals charged with planning an operation in the capital, Caracas, two of whom were American nationals. The U.S. mercenaries admitted that they were arrested during a failed attempt to raid Venezuela's presidential palace and seize President Nicolas Maduro. Considering the controversy surrounding the presence of U.S. private security firms abroad, experts believe Washington seeks a lower level of accountability by reducing the number of its declared troops in countries like Afghanistan.
America is an empire. President Biden is the current administrator of that empire. There's a lot of opposition among the people of America to never-ending so-called forever wars.
What's certain is that the United States is unwilling to leave the region, no matter if that would translate into the privatization of its wars in West Asia.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters all over the world, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to Q&A and Islamic Beliefs from IRIB English Radio. In this series of shows, we are trying to answer questions, doubts, or misconceptions which are being asked or are sent to this radio station with regard to Islamic theology. For this, we try to invite Islamic scholars and speakers from Qom Seminary schools. Like always, we have invited Sheikh Murtada Karimi to help us with his answer to the questions which are going to be asked concerning the holy month of Ramadan. The questions that we have and we shall pose and talk about are mostly in this very session about the holy month of Ramadan. Shaykhana, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam and thank you for having me.
Dear brothers and sisters, in our today's show, we shall talk about the, again, another aspect of the holy month of Ramadan, or the philosophy of fasting in this holy month, and the kind of look that Islam has over this issue. Some might say that why Islam is so strict about the holy month of Ramadan, that is, in case there are some people who do not observe the fasting rules, they are actually condemned to some punishments. So why is it so? If a person is going to stay Muslim and he has to and he is obliged to fast, so has Islam ever thought about the conditions that a person is in? Like, for example, in case he is suffering from a disease or any other situation that we don't know, and it depends from case to case. But this is the question that we need to ask from Sheikh Murtada Karimi, Islamic researcher from Palm Seminary School. Sheikh, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Thanks for accepting the invitation, Sheikh. The question of the day, Sheikh, is that why Islam is so strict about the fasting and the whole month of Ramadan? As I said earlier, why Islam cannot be flexible with the believers in case they are not able to fast and they eat, for example, eat or drink in the streets? So, and some punishments have been actually legislated for those who actually do not observe the rules of fasting. Is there anything special about it that Islam is that strict on it? But actually, I am asking this question from as it was asked, I know that Islam is not that strict. But when those listeners or those brothers and sisters who are listening to us need to, inshallah, stay tuned and receive the answer from Sheikh Murtada Karimi. But Islam, as it is said, it is the religion of mercy, the religion of rahmah. And all the conditions that a person might be in are considered in Islamic rulings. So let's listen to the answer of Sheikh Murtada Karimi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As you mentioned, socially speaking, we have different types of understanding this question. Is Islam strict about an obligation called fasting? Yes. I mean, as a Muslim, you believe in the religion of Islam, you believe in the Prophet, you believe in the whole, the Noble Book of Quran, and fasting is one of the main obligations for any Muslim. It's mentioned in the Quran, and there are many narrations in this regard. So for a Muslim to be a true Muslim, a practicing Muslim, he needs to say the prayer, he needs to fast, pay khums, zakat, go to hajj, and so on and so forth. Is Islam strict in this regard? If you mean that, the person who for no reason abandons prayer, fasting, hajj, yes, these people will be punished on the Day of Judgment, mm-hmm. because they are not acting upon their obligations.
True.
But I think now the main question, so from this angle, there is no difference between fasting and other acts of worship. On the Day of Judgment, you as a Muslim will be punished, if Allah wills, because of the obligations that you abandoned and did not act upon without any excuse. So there is no difference between fasting and prayer, for example. But now the second point is about, maybe governmental punishment, the punishment that an Islamic government may impose upon the people. Again, there is no difference between fasting and prayer and hajj and khums and zakat and so on and so forth. First of all, as an individual act, even within Islamic territory in which the constitution is based on Islamic laws, no one is going to be punished because of the fact that he is not acting upon prayer, fasting, hajj, khums and zakat.
Definitely.
So, no agent from Islamic government is going to investigate the members of a family, whether they are saying the prayer, whether they are fasting, they are paying homes, they are going to hajj. So no one has the right to do that. This is absolutely against the Islamic laws and against the dignity of the Muslims. So again, there is no difference between fasting and other acts of worship from this perspective.
Very true.
Now, some acts, they have some social manifestations. Like, for example, we can think of drinking alcohol in public. We can think of not practicing hijab in public. And we can think of, not fasting or breaking fast or eating and drinking in public.
Let's differentiate between not fasting and breaking the fast in public. Because not fasting, this is something private and personal, and no one will be punished for that. Right?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's a good point. So before talking about why do we have any punishment for that, I need to say that, again, there is a difference between an Islamic government and, non-Muslim countries. So, for example, in countries where in which the Islam is not the base for the constitution, no Muslim has the right to punish even another Muslim for not practicing, for example, fasting. So, for example, you are living in UK, for example, or in the United States. You live in a Muslim community. You know a brother who is a Muslim, but you see that in public he is not practicing fasting, and he's breaking, he's eating and drinking. Do you have any right to, like, punish him or her?
No.
Not at all. So in a non-Muslim country, no Muslim, will be punished for not acting upon Islamic obligations.
Very true.
It's true about, practicing hijab as well. It could be about drinking alcohol as well. I mean, in every country, in every region, people would be treated based on the laws of that government. So only we are talking about a Muslim society in which Islam is the base for the the constitution and for the laws. And in the world, we have few countries who claim, are thought to be like that. So let's talk about that from, the Islamic Republic of Iran's perspective. Islamic Republic of Iran, its constitution is based on the Noble Book of Quran and the narrations of the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt. Now, if we want to answer this question from, like, a democratic way, we can say that the people in Islamic Republic of Iran, they have voted for Islam to be the source of the laws in the constitution.
True.
So even from a Western perspective, democracy requires that the viewpoint of the majority of the people should be respected.
The decision of the majority.
Exactly. Now, the majority, or rather the great majority of Iranians, Iranian population, they have voted for Islam to be the source.
True.
And most of the Iranians, they are, practicing Muslims. So if the majority of Iran's population, they have voted for Islam to be practiced, it means that they have voted for social, aspects of Islam to be respected as well.
Very true.
So the majority of Iran, when I say the majority, maybe we can say that the great majority of the people, they are practicing. And if there is a law in the constitution of Iran that no one should break his fast, should eat and drink publicly during the holy month of Ramadan, this law should be respected by all the Iranians based on democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And no Western country can blame Iran for that. The majority of the people, they have voted for this. And they expect the Islamic Republic to act upon this obligation and duty of the Muslims. Now, is it so we have some laws in Islam, in Iran's constitution, about the fact that people should not break their fast publicly. Is it based on the verses of the Quran and the narrations? Yes, of course. So, for example, we have some narrations which tell us that if some people, they are Muslims, they break their fast and they believe that fasting is not an obligation. So they may be accused not only for breaking the fast, but also for apostasy. Let me just share one narration in this regard. I just want to mention that we should not think that this is a law forged by Islamic Republic of Iran and invented by, I mean, this government. No, we have some narration in this regard. For example, one of the companions of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says that I asked him about an rajulun ukhiba fi shahr Ramadan waqad aftara thalatha marrat. They saw a man publicly, he's breaking his fast 3 times. And Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says that yutfa'u ila al-imam, he will be given to the imam and he will be punished accordingly, because the punishment is different. Sometimes he is a practicing Muslim. He doesn't believe that fasting is not an obligation. Right. No, he believes that it is an obligation, but for any reason, he is not practicing. Mm-hmm. So for that, there might be a minor punishment. If there is the possibility, if he doesn't believe in fasting at all, then there is another scenario. So my point is that the laws of Islamic Republic of Iran, they are based on Islamic laws.
Yeah.
And Islamic laws require the people to practice the laws which have social manifestation. One of them is drinking alcohol. No one has the right to drink alcohol publicly in Muslim countries, or practicing hijab, and also, practicing fasting. So we have these laws in the constitution which are based on the Islamic sources. Why we have some punishments? Because we know that there are different scenarios, different philosophies. Punishments, they prevent other people from committing the same. And the last one that I would like to share, that even if there is no law, I think that humanity and courtesy and politeness ask every Muslim to respect other Muslims as well. So imagine, even if you're not living in an Islamic country, we know that almost all the people in my community, they are fasting. So it's mm-hmm. against courtesy and politeness to,
very true.
I mean, drink an alcohol in front of even, 9 years girls.
Who as are, they are expect a guest to respect their own exactly. laws and regulations exactly. while in their country.
Yeah.
So in different lands, in different actual homes, we need to respect the rules of the owner of exactly. the house.
So although there may not be any punishment for that, but as I mentioned, courtesy and politeness and humanity ask us to, have this kind of politeness, at least in front of other people. You mentioned those people who are diseased, they can eat in their homes mm-hmm. or privately, not in front of other people who are
And for fasting. A Muslim sheikh, if a Muslim unknowingly actually breaks his fast and he has a problem, let's say he's suffering from a disease and he has a problem and he cannot fast, and he breaks his fast and soam in the street while others are fasting, so what is the decree and rule on this person?
For sure, Islamic laws are based on justice. So if that person has done that, unknowingly and without any purpose, without disrespecting the other people who are practicing fasting, for sure he will not be punished. And the Islamic juries and the Islamic judge, they will not pose any punishment for such a person. Because normally the people who, they break their fast knowingly, they show other signs which prove for the judge that he is doing that without any excuse. But if there are some excuses, for sure they will be forgiven.
And if knowingly a person actually breaks the fast?
As I mentioned, there are some punishment mentioned in the Iranian laws for such a person, which is based on the Islamic sources.
Thank you very much, dear Sheikh. Sheikh Murtada Karimi from Qom Seminary Schools, and his answers, scholarly answers to the questions which were posed here in this session. Dear brothers and sisters, many thanks for staying tuned and thanks for listening. We'll be back to you, inshallah, again with another topic to be discussed with regard to the questions that we might face in the holy month of Ramadan. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Inna fil jannati nahran laban li Ali Hussein wa Hassan, li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban, li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. لعلي وحسين وحسن حب آل البيت فرض عندنا حب آل البيت فرض عندنا وبهذا الحب لنا شميحا
www.parstoday.com/en